I want to read you a Twitter exchange. Don't worry, it's not Twitter beef or anything like that. It precipitated this podcast. My name is Mike McCafferty. I do a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, which you're listening to right now. But every once in a while, I go on Twitter, and I have it sort of geared up for Star Trek. And I saw this exchange about Star Trek. PlaidStations.com said, "Dear Star Trek the Motion Picture, you are still too slow, and HD TVs haven't helped with the Starfleet pants. Yikes. But you've aged very well. Your story is solid, and you look amazing. 40 years later, I like you more now." Which is kind of... okay. So, against my better judgment, I weighed in, as we all do on Twitter. There's never any good judgment on Twitter, is there? And I said the following. "The motion picture is not a picture about the original cast. It's about Decker, Ilia, and V'ger." And then, because I was feeling a little bit saucy, perhaps because I was feeling a little bit like the villain of this tweet, I added, "Kirk is the villain of this film." And we've talked about this before in my original The Motion Picture podcast. I mentioned he might be the villain. Dan Martin, who I don't know, then weighed in and said, "Interesting observation. Thank you. I don't agree at all, but it's intriguing." Now, I could have responded via Twitter, just in in words. Crude, inefficient words, short sentences, or multiple tweets. I could have written a response on the I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek Facebook page, which you're all welcome to go there whenever you want and weigh in and bring out new ideas and comment on stuff. I could have done that and then linked it back to him and said, "Aha, look at this long treatise I put out here." And I thought, well, that would take a lot of effort too. Why don't I just respond in podcast? And I could have also just pointed him to the Star Trek The Motion Picture podcast, The Movie Dive, but I went back and I listened to the beginning, and there's some audio issues, and I don't want him to say, I don't know what the hell you were saying the first 3 minutes. I didn't have it all figured out back then. So instead, I'm going to take a couple minutes here to prove to Dan and to Plaid Stallions and to you guys that out of all the options, Kirk was the villain. So let's quick dive into it. All right. First, two conceits about Star Trek The Motion Picture. The first is that its source material, the original series, was all about a hero and his journey through the stars. It was all about Captain Kirk doing heroic things, encountering strange new worlds, and dealing with it in the most heroic American way that he knew. Most of the time he succeeded, sometimes he failed. Remember A Private Little War? Remember that when he was trying to do the right thing, but for the wrong reasons, trying to do the wrong thing for the right reasons, and he wanted to beam down like flintlocks to have this little backwards planet go to war. In almost every single episode, maybe I was thinking about Assignment Earth, Kirk is the hero, and he does heroic things. So that's the first conceit we must make about this treatise I'm making here. The second is that as we are analyzing the motion picture from a script standpoint, we've already acknowledged that it is a complete mess, that it had no less than 5 people working on it sometimes on the script, including the screenwriter, Gene Roddenberry, Robert Wise, the director. And then, because the filming went on so long, a clause kicked in on Shatner and Nimoy's contract, which allowed them to give notes on the script. So by this point in time, there are at least 5 different people working on the script. And we have Walter Koenig saying, "I was rather in awe of Robert Wise. We started the picture with only 2/3 of a finished screenplay, though. They were reshooting, they were getting pages on the day. So this script is an absolute mess. So it is hard for us to look at the script or at the story as a finished product and say, oh, it's the script's problem, or that they had a definitive direction of which way they were going. So what I'm looking at is the finished product and reverse engineering it to prove my point that James T. Kirk was the villain of the motion picture." All right, so very quickly, I want to go back and trace character arcs because that's a good way you can figure out who the story is about. Whenever I do my writing stuff, and as an aside, I write for TV and film sometimes. I also act in TV and film sometimes, so I have to know what the characters and know what the arcs are. And the easiest way to make a good movie is to establish a strong arc for your hero, for your lead. If you know what they want in the beginning, you are on your way. And then the second half of the film is finding out what they actually needed, which is always different. It's a little bit in lockstep, but what a character wants in the beginning of a film or any story is generally a physical thing or some sort of achievement. I want to win the Olympics. I want to kiss the girl. I want to do these things. I want to do these physical things. I want to eat 100 hot dogs at the hot dog eating contest. But what they find they need by the second half of the film is a lot more esoteric, a lot more removed. Like what I needed was to see that I am good enough, that I needed love in my life, that achievements don't matter. It's you know, the personal betterment of myself. These can sometimes be a little wishy-washy when you try to articulate them on a podcast as a response to someone on Twitter. But if you can figure out those two questions, what they want and what they really needed, that's a good place to hinge your movie upon. So let's take a oh my gosh. You know, I cough here in this podcast, and I don't care. Let's take a look at some of these characters' arcs, their wants and their needs, and see if they line up. James T. Kirk, Admiral, I can't remember if he's an admiral in this. Kirk wants the Enterprise back. It's been refitted, it's ready to go back out in space, and he wants it back. He tells Scotty, "They gave it back to me, Scotty. They gave it back." It's the one thing that he's wanted. And we see that echoed in Star Trek II as well. This is the strongest need that I can identify in the motion picture for Kirk. Maybe he wants to save the world, but if you trace it back, that is a result of him wanting to have the Enterprise. The fact that V'ger is attacking Earth or is moving towards Earth is an opportunity for him to get the Enterprise back. This is what he wanted. If he wanted to save the Earth, there are a lot of different ways to do that. If he's an admiral, he can, you know, set up a fleet. He can try different ways. He can work with scientists. He can take a shuttlecraft. He can do whatever he wants. He wants the Enterprise. And in the motion picture, you know what? He gets it. He gets it before the first act's done. He just rolls in and says, I've got the Enterprise. And from that point on, his character arc does not arc very much at all. There's not much that he does. He gets tested by Decker. They go into the V'ger. They sit there, and he observes a lot of stuff. I think in my earlier podcast, I said that he's sort of an observer in the motion picture. He's sort of on a ride. Him and the rest of the crew just like are shuttled between different events, and he just sort of looks at it in the captain's chair. But why does he need to do anything? He's got what he wants. He's got the Enterprise. His arc starts and ends in the first act. All right, moving on with that, we have Spock. Now, Spock is about ready to go through the Kalinar to remove all emotion, and he stops because he hears this great voice out in the cosmos, you know, crying out for help. It's V'ger. And so with that, he goes off, and he actually communicates with V'ger and discovers that V'ger is a child, and this is wonderful, interesting information. But his arc ends pretty quickly, too. It ends in the middle of the film, basically. It gives Kirk the information to, like, treat V'ger like a child, basically. So this can't be his story necessarily either, because his arc starts up and then finishes rather quickly. Generally, whoever's the lead also starts their story, and their resolution is the last. Whatever they learn at the end of the film, whoever learns the last thing, generally, as long as it's not like a joke, you know, lesson, that's your hero. That's the lead of the film, or anti-hero. All right, so Spock, I would say, is a B story. And it's a good arc, it arcs through nicely, but then it ends. So it's not his film. It's certainly not McCoy's or Scotty's or Sulu or Chekhov's or Uhura's. They're just along for the ride. They're just sitting at these consoles and pushing buttons and staring in incredible awe at a screen which will later on be filled with VFX. It's not them. All right, so then let's look at our guest stars. This is a film about guest stars. This is an episode of Star Trek, in essence. And so let's take a look at our guest stars. Captain Decker. Captain Decker, this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to be the captain of the Enterprise. Now, Gene Roddenberry has said that it is canon that he is Matt Decker's son, Matt Decker, who was killed himself, basically, in the Doomsday Machine. So he has a very strong want. He wants to get in his father's command chair. He wants to be the captain of a ship again, and he gets the Enterprise, the flagship of the Federation. He finally gets it. The refit's almost done. They're about ready to go. And then what happens? James T. Kirk shows up and takes it away from him. So we have a good want here. He wants to be the captain of the Enterprise, and he's not. He never gets to be the captain in this. Now, as you chase through the arc of a movie or TV show or something with a character, eventually they get what they want. They get it in the midpoint. They get it in the middle of the film, and then they discover they get too much or they don't get what they really need. So if we arc through this, Deckard gets kind of demoted to commander and starts showing up Kirk on his journey. I mean, because Kirk knows nothing about this ship. I mean, he is not very useful in this movie because he just sits on this ship that he knows nothing about, usurping it from Deckard. Deckard shows him up, you know, by destroying the asteroid and the wormhole, by knowing more about the ship. And then eventually, he sort of becomes a default captain when Ilea is returned by V'ger as a probe into the Enterprise. So he has what he wants because he has emasculated Kirk in some ways, because no one can talk to Ilea as well as Deckard can. He is the captain of this story from that point forward. Kirk certainly couldn't, so he gets everything he wants. Now, as we move on through the story, he realizes it's not what he wanted. What he really wanted was a connection with Ilea, to explore that relationship that they both walked away from to a degree. You know, he left and she was celibate. We'll get into her arc. So by the end, Kirk has an opportunity to connect the V'ger stuff and to be the person who links with Ilea. But ultimately, Deckard realizes this is what he really needed. He needed to have not a ship, but a way to explore both the cosmos and his relationship with Ilea. And I'm sorry if you're hearing these planes. They fly planes over Van Nuys Airport, these World War II planes. All right, let's take a look at Ilea very quickly. Ilea, her want, and this is kind of an interesting, follow me on this, is to maintain her celibacy. This is a weird thing, but her race are known for being celibate. And so when her and Deckard were together on their planet, he left to pursue his career, and she is maintaining this kind of oath of celibacy. I know that sounds like a weird thing, but if that's what she wants, she gets it. Because by the midpoint of the film, she's been turned into this robot. She is completely asexual. She is just this, you know, walking Siri, basically, walking through the Enterprise. But then as she goes through, as she gets this, she realizes that the parts of her that are still Ilea still have feelings for Deckard. And she's able to finally start to, she finally has a vessel and a way in which to express that in a way that she's no longer a human and no longer a robot, but something different. So by the end of this film, she is able to move through this emotional and physical celibacy by convincing both herself, by seeing the value of this, and by convincing V'ger as well, by saying there is value to human connection, both physical and emotional. So she learns that being celibate, being essentially alone and isolated from humanity and human contact is not the way to do it. And she does that by exploring it through herself and through V'ger. So that's her arc. It's a little bit more confusing, but it's still there. Let's talk about V'ger. V'ger is a child cast into the universe by its parents. It is given a note just saying, go out and learn things. Go out and learn them. And so it does. This poor creature, this poor Frankenstein's monster, travels out into the world and learns and eventually becomes strong enough that this orphan of Earth decides to return home. Maybe it's angry, maybe it's sad, maybe it's confused. It's hard to kind of glean through exactly what it was V'ger was feeling, because you have Ilea not necessarily communicating a lot of those information, but it returns home to find out, to ask, what am I? I mean, Spock says, it's question, is this all there is? Is there nothing more? Is there nothing more to me? We all return home to our parents to say, why was I created? What is my purpose? And eventually, through the arc of of learning through Ilea and Decker, it realizes that it is more than what it was, and that it doesn't need those answers from its parents of Earth, of humans, that it is part of that answer, and that to continue forward is to take part of what is human from where it started and part of what it is now, this weird Borg-like robot, and become something new, and to leave that. It is not an accident that the film ends with the human adventures just beginning. Now, a lot of people could think, oh, well, maybe that's just all about, you know, Kirk and Spock and those guys. I think it's all about V'ger and Decker and Ilea in this weird threesome of celestial, you know, uprising. That's their part of the story. And I'm not going to read that text. I'm sorry. I know you heard that. But that is definitely V'ger's arc. And it's certainly, it is the last arc that we see, because at the very end, Decker, Ilea, and V'ger are all joined, and then they explode and turn into energy, I guess? I mean, the whole ship's just gone except for the Enterprise. I have to believe that it has taken that final step and it realizes it doesn't need to be organic, it doesn't need to be mechanical, it can become something completely different. And with Decker and Ilea in itself, the three of them have solved all of their own problems internally and now can work together to be something different. Something different that is beyond human. The human adventure for them is just beginning. Or you can take it very at face value and say, oh, okay, that's all out of the way. Now Kirk can have his story. Either way, these three have such a strong character arcs individually or together that in no way can I say that this is Kirk's story. So if Kirk, it's not his story, then he is either a bystander or the villain. And the more I think about it, and I thought about this last night, Plaid Stallions and Dan Martin, I thought about it. Kirk, at every juncture of the story, inserts himself to make their lives harder. He demotes Decker to take the one thing he wanted. He endangers Ilea and basically gets her turned into a robot and you know, puts her on a path that is away from the things that she wants, which is either Decker or to remain celibate. In either case, he has transformed her with his bad decisions, with the decision to go and meet V'ger with one ship and to roll in there and to get sucked in there and not know how to deal with the ship, and then she gets, you know, captured. And certainly with V'ger, V'ger's goal is just to go to Earth, transmit the signal, and if not, deploy a whole bunch of his little satellites, or her satellites, and suck up all the information about Earth. That's all V'ger wants, is to get this information. Is this all I am? Is there nothing more? And instead, Kirk denies V'ger that information by saying, we won't give it to you until you do certain things for us. Will transmit the information, but only on our terms. He gets in the way of all three of these characters. That sounds like a villain, or certainly an agent of chaos, or someone who is there to create obstacles. At best, Kirk is a hindrance and annoyance, or at worst, he's the villain of the film. If you look at the film in this light, if you look at it as three characters trying to figure out who they are, and this curmudgeonly man who will do anything to hang on to his ship and his crew so he can go off and have adventures, and he does everything he can to get in their way, then the whole paradigm flips, and we're not watching Kirk, we're watching these three, and the villain is Kirk, get in their way. Now, in Star Trek II, we will revisit this idea of Kirk trying to get hold of the Enterprise. But in that story, he has a very strong arc, and he learns a lot about friendship and command and the no-win situation. In that, he is the last person to truly learn about stuff, and he finally realizes as he's sitting there on the bridge, staring out at the planet where his best friend's casket is laying on the planet. So he gets that at that point in time. But at the end of this movie, he learns nothing. He's flip about it. Out there. That-a-way. That's not a learning moment. That's a flip moment where a villain has won. He's gotten everything he wanted, and now he moves forward. That's a Thanos moment. That's like Thanos in Infinity Wars, like breathing deeply and like, I'm gonna make gourds for dinner tonight. Always wonder about, he was like making soup in the second movie. I wonder what that soup tasted like. I wonder if he was like, was he a vegetarian? Thanos must have been a vegetarian, right? That's actually kind of awesome about that. All right, so that's my presentation, my thesis about why Kirk is the villain. And it's very, very targeted towards this tweet, this set of tweets. And I hope you enjoyed it, those guys. And I hope everyone else enjoyed it. And I hope you all stick around because we're going to be going, I mean, looking at I Borg. And then we're going to be getting into Picard soon. I have lots of thoughts about that. We can also talk about the short trek, the Children of Mars, in relationship to that. But for now, I want to leave you guys, obviously, with the Sean Cassidy version of Aaliyah's theme. Also, Aaliyah's theme started the film. It's a love story. And who else is good to tell a love story through a love song with Sean Cassidy? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this little podcast. I did. I know I proved my point. That's irrefutable. The internet is all about me being right. Hang around, stick around. 2020 is going to be amazing. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek.
Ever flown to one star that will make our own, where the universe ends, our world begins, somewhere beyond the dawn.